Oh, hello. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:14 on a beautiful Monday morning. Now, don't panic out there in Radio Land. The affable, yea, even lovable Joe Donahue is on the way, and he will be here shortly. In the meantime, as we sort of get rolling here, Ray Graff in for him just for a brief time. And what a panel we have today. It's always exciting to welcome Albany County District Attorney David Soares to the program. Welcome back.
Hello.
Shocked that you haven't run screaming away after being on this program a few times, but nice to have you back here.
I love the pain.
He's one of my favorite people in the world, by the way. He is.
And another reason to run away screaming.
Fighting district attorney.
Nice. And yeah. Big Al, we call him, WAMC's Alan Chartock, is here, and always nice. Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is here, just by the skin of your something or other.
I can vouch for the traffic.
Well, you're here.
I'm here. I made it.
The difference is you didn't land in a plane a little while ago, and that's what Joe did.
Ah.
So he's on the way.
Because he was at a big event last night.
Yes, he was.
He'll tell you all about
that. Yeah, he will. But I have to say to Teresa, while we're at it, you know, as I always said to my students, when they said the traffic was terrible, I say, start earlier.
Right. I mean, what's the number one rule about being successful? Right?
Start early.
Be on time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was on time.
More or less.
Yeah, but you caused a few hairs to fall off of Ray's head. Which, of course,
it's what you've left in your wake
is dangerous.
I did not hit anything on the way.
All right,
good morning. So delightful to be here on such a lovely day.
Very nice indeed, and thank you to exchange pleasantries with you. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. If you want to email the program, and we'll be getting started shortly, vamping for a few until Joe gets here. Now, keep your letters short if you can, to the point.
Why do you keep saying short when you're looking at me?
Don't include links. We can't click them on the air. Don't use abbreviations. Proofread if you can. I know sometimes in the heat of the moment you have an idea, you want to get it out there. Take that extra minute. It's panel@wamc.org. Japan's defense minister is sounding an alarm on North Korea, saying its nuclear and ballistic missile capabilities have grown to what he called an unprecedented, critical, and imminent level. The minister, Itsunori Odonera, said that this rising threat means his country, along with South Korea and the U.S., have to collectively take what he called different responses. He did not elaborate. The comments were made at the outset of a meeting with U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and South Korea's defense minister at a meeting in the Philippines. Meanwhile, Jimmy Carter says, send me to North Korea. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read the Maureen Dowd interview with Jimmy Carter over the weekend in the New York Times, but he said, he's willing to go to North Korea. He said that he's talked to his friend McMaster. And he got
Dennis
a negative.
Dennis Rodman.
Got a negative response.
Yeah. Jimmy Carter or Dennis Rodman? I think I'm with Carter on this one.
You know, it was an interesting interview for a number of reasons. Did you see he weighed in on a number of things?
Well, his longtime grievance with the Clintons certainly was brought to bear in that interview.
And what were they, just to remind us?
His longtime grievance?
Yes.
He felt that they didn't treat him with proper respect.
And he made a little crack about the Clinton Foundation. He said, we give our money to the Carter Foundation, but we never take any out. I think that may have been a
shot.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, I think he was used as a punching bag, during the Clinton administration. And I think if you're amongst the conservatives, Carter is a punchline. And I don't think that the Clintons did enough to defend him and defend his presidency. And so the man right now has some issues and he wants the public to know. So,
well, I don't know. I think that they paid him a lot of respect. Certainly he is a tremendous ex-president. And he has done incredible work in his lifetime. And at, 95
or something?
He certainly didn't retire after his presidency. Certainly did not. He continued to make changes in the world. And I think I couldn't think of a more perfect person to begin having, diplomatic dialogue with North Korea, considering the State Department considering the State Department has half of its employees that are not occupying their desks right now.
Did you see what he said about the media and its handling of President Trump?
Yes.
I think that was very well timed, and I think his statements were... Well, I think that if you want to get to the President of the United States...
Right, it was transactional.
You have to compliment him, and I think he took that opportunity.
I'm not sure it was fully a compliment. It was sort of a shot at the media saying, you know, the media has been harder on this president than any he has seen in his lifetime.
Well, wait a second. Just for a second. Let's just back up and remind everybody what he did say about the media. What did he say about the media?
He said that the media has been tougher. I don't have the exact quotes in front of me, but tougher than they've been very tough on Trump. But okay, they have been tough on Trump, but it's because of Trump's behavior. If Trump wasn't doing the things that he's doing, then perhaps that, you know, if there weren't issues about collusion with the Russians, if there weren't issues about the ban, if he was serious about solving the health care problem, I think it's true that the media has done its job, and I think they could probably do it a little bit more aggressively on the policy side of tracking what he says and does and comparing it against the truth. He lies all the time. Check PolitiFacts.
That's absolutely true. But don't you think Carter's statements were more opportunistic?
Yeah, I think they were transactional. I think he wants something, and so he says something nice. And that's how it was described in a couple
of
interviews.
Well, why do you say the word, for those of us who were
when
not
I say
English
transactional,
majors? Yeah, what does transactional mean?
It means that he wants to go to North Korea. He wants a position, you know, have Trump folks do something, give him an assignment. And so he says something nice about Trump.
What he said was, and I have the quote, "I think the media have been harder on Trump than any other president, certainly that I've known about," Carter replied. "I think they feel free to claim that Trump is mentally deranged and everything else without hesitation."
So there you see, that's a brilliant way of doing it. Instead of his saying and taking that risk because he wants Trump to help him out here, he says the media says he's mentally deranged, but he uses the term mentally deranged, which is interesting, you know. I know that one.
I commend everyone to take a look at this article if you can. There was a quote about Russia.
And where is that article?
It's in the New York Times.
Maureen Dowd.
Yeah. I think it was in yesterday. Yeah. He said, quote, "I don't think there's any evidence that what the Russians did changed enough votes or any votes."
He doesn't know that yet.
That's what he said.
He doesn't know that yet. Read the New York Times story about what the Republicans are doing in the House and Senate with the investigations. Yeah.
Are you saying that the sainted Jimmy Carter is wrong about something?
Well, he's wrong about something. We don't know the answer yet. He is.
Again, I think it's a. I think
I'm
those comments were transactional. I mean, if you're trying to get the president's attention, you're going to say something negative about the media, and you're going to say something. You're going to question the Russian investigation, and he wants to go to North Korea in the worst way.
And there are a lot of people who do believe what he says about. Well, first of all, there's some people who agree with him just on the merits of calling somebody deranged because they're active in the mental health community and they think that that's wrong. And Alan, I know there's been a lot, you know, a lot of people write in here and
say, when I say something about crazy, they don't like it.
Right. So put that aside. Overall, I think Trump and his team have been very aggressive and methodical about saying, you know, the fake media, fake news, fake media, and denigrating the media. And I think that that's working.
Let's take a quick break here. We have David Soares on the panel today, Teresa Bourgeois and Alan Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Of course, it's Dave Brubeck here on a Monday morning. Ray Graff temporarily in for Joe Donahue. Joe racing here right now, and he will be with you shortly to pick up the mantle here on the panel. In the meantime, Alan Shartok is here, David Soares and Teresa Bourgeois, as well as you, at panel@wamc.org. An attempt by 19 states to force President Trump to pay health care subsidies will go before a federal judge in San Francisco today. State attorneys general will try to convince U.S. District Court judge that the payments are required by law. The payments allow for lower out-of-pocket costs for consumers who get coverage under former President Obama's health care law. The President Trump, that is, apparently abruptly cut them off earlier this month, saying Obamacare is imploding. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, meanwhile, says he's willing to bring bipartisan health care legislation to the floor if President Trump makes clear he supports it. Around and around we go. Teresa Bourgeois.
It's Trump Care now. It's the Affordable Care Act Trump version because he's done everything possible to destroy it.
Well, it's imploding, Teresa. I'm sure you'll agree, because he's making it implode.
Exactly. He says, if only there was a way to contain insurance costs. Well, there was a way. It's called the Affordable Care Act. It was working, and it was reducing the rates of increase. It needs help. It needs some changes and improvements.
What improvements would you say it needed?
What improvements do they need?
In Teresa Bourgeois's opinion.
They need to work on controlling drug prices. That's a big, big issue. And they need to continue to find ways to lower costs, to lower premiums, but it was moving in that direction. And to get young people who weren't buying into the program to do that, to understand
how you do that
insurance.
How do you get the young people to do it?
I think part of it is education. I think how you don't get them to do it is talk about how they don't really need it. And how you don't do it, there's a interesting New York Times story, Robert Payer, who's a tremendous healthcare writer, has been at it for 30 years. He wrote an assessment of these association plans and how dangerous those are. And a lot of young people will move to those. President Trump just signed an executive order, two weeks ago, opening up opportunities for people to join these so-called association plans. But they have a really bad history of leaving people. They pay into them. They are, he's reduced, they're not regulated as aggressively as other healthcare insurance mechanisms. And the executive order further loosened those regulations so that they can work across state lines. So what happens is people pay into them. They're not properly regulated, so they're not properly funded oftentimes, and then people end up without insurance. They think that they have insurance and they don't.
Well, do we actually know, Teresa, just for the sake of clarity, do we actually know that that anybody's ending up without coverage?
With association plans?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's lawsuit after lawsuit. Read Robert Pierce's story. He talked about specific lawsuits in Texas where people were left with $1 million in unpaid bills. I won't remember all the states. I don't have it in front of me because I didn't open my computer. But there are four or five different states where there's lawsuits. Right now, association plans are not supposed to be sold across the state, so states, in theory, regulate them. But once you allow them across states, now I'm not an expert in association plans, I got to live a little carefully, but once you take away even the state regulation or fuzzy up who's in charge, it's even less covered.
David Soares.
No, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the costs of medication and drugs.
I mean, that's a big piece.
It's a huge piece. And if you really wanted to drive costs down, because I think, you know, in terms of the premiums, I think those two things they're interrelated. You drive the cost of the drugs down, and it's naturally going to drive down the cost of your premiums. But that's not this administration and this Congress. They don't want to have these discussions. They're looking to destroy entitlements in order to rewrite the tax code.
Right. Exactly.
And the bottom line, so we can continue to treat, you know, these signals legitimately and have these debates, but let's be really honest here. That's not what anyone wants to talk about in the House, in the Senate, and surely in the White House.
Well, there is a bipartisan...
we're giving you the
1 minute.
1 minute signal.
We have about a minute here until a break.
Bipartisan House... I mean, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate did come up with a plan to stabilize the Affordable Health Care Act, and the Trump administration is blocking it from coming to the Senate floor.
All right, that's a good spot to take a quick break here. Teresa Bourgeois is on the panel today, Albany County District Attorney David Soares and WAMC's Alan Chartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We will take a break for news from the BBC, and then Mr. Joe Donahue we'll take to the microphone. We'll see you on the other side.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Hey, Joe's back.
Sorry I'm late.
Welcome back, Joe.
By the way, I have to tell you, first of all, I flew in from D.C., and I took a 720 plane, and I got here, I don't know, the plane landed at 8:50. But here's something that I like about morning commutes when you're flying, and they serve you vodka. That's awesome. Man, that's good.
You don't have to pay for it?
And well, it's all vouchers, you know. Well, you probably, you have a driver, right? I mean, you know,
I don't have a driver.
I don't.
Coffee and orange juice.
Well, sure, me too. Yeah, it was great. Went to the Mark Twain Prize last night at the Kennedy Center to see my hero and idol David Letterman be to receive the award, and it was an awesome time.
Great.
And
so exciting. At the Kennedy Center, right?
At the Kennedy Center. Yeah, that's beautiful. How many events have you been there at the Kennedy when you lived in D.C.? Did you
many.
Go there?
I love whenever I loved going there.
Yeah.
I worked for the congressman who made it happen. Kennedy Center.
Who is
that?
Frank Thompson Jr.
Now, would you be bragging just like the congresswoman did with the FBI building?
She didn't do it. Okay. Turns right. out she didn't do it at all. However,
she wasn't even there when the money was. She never said that. She wasn't even there.
Well, I heard you talking about Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's be done with that.
Okay, we can be done with that. Although I'm a huge Jimmy Carter fan, so I disagree with some of you. But anyway.
Then I should read you Hans's
letter. I'm a big Jimmy Carter fan, too, except for on some issues.
I should read you Hans's letter.
Please do.
Roundtable Carter. I have great respect for President Carter, but he was bamboozled by the North Koreans in 2004. Sending him again would make no sense. That's a letter from Hans.
Well, what do we have to lose in that?
Well, Do we send Jimmy Carter, or do we just talk until the bombs drop, according to Mr. Tillerson?
Well,
send Jimmy Walls, Dr. James Walls. He's a real expert in North Korea.
I was thinking about this as you were all talking about it. You send Carter, and he goes, and then Trump tweets about how he should just give up.
But right. Maybe you send Carter in to meet with Donald Trump and explain to him where North Korea is and what this.
And maybe
is.
Donald Trump doesn't want to meet
maybe
with
you
President Carter.
Maybe President Carter is best serving the nation by briefing Donald Trump about North Korea.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just taking a moment here. Look, we were reading a quote earlier this morning about the Prime Minister of Japan.
Yes.
His remarks.
Who just won a huge re-election.
But, you know, this issue of North Korea for us, living in the state of New York, is one thing. It's an entirely different proposition if you live in the neighborhood.
Exactly, especially when those missiles are flying over Japan.
Exactly.
Well, Martha Raddatz did an interesting piece. She was just with the troops in that region, showing the buildup in that region with the troops. And I think what's happening now is Trump is doing a big Asia trip. And I think between now and November 1st, you're going to see a lot of posturing, a lot more posturing in advance of that Asia trip.
Anyway, we had a couple more letters. Joe's catching up here. Let me just say, Mike, I'm glad someone of importance called out Clinton's on their use of the Clinton Foundation funds. It should be dismantled immediately, says Mike. I think the Clinton Foundation's done some good things.
I think the Clinton Foundation has done tremendous things, and they've been swift-boated by the Trump people. Compare the Clinton Foundation and the Trump Foundation.
There are a lot of people who are drinking clean water, you know, this morning because of the Clinton Foundation. And as a matter of fact, perhaps we ought to be directing members of the Clinton Foundation in that administration to Puerto Rico, since the U.S. government can't seem to locate that.
And like the Bloomberg folks, they are down there. But not clean water, disease mitigation, education for girls, a lot of green technologies developed because they developed these. What they did was connect people. They were a connector of people. And in fact, they just finished their annual, it's called CGI, Clinton Global University, where they bring university students together from around the United States and around the world who are working on projects that can change the world in a positive way, whether they're green technology or education projects or whatever. They have done a lot of seed planting around the world to improve our lives.
Okay, I want to read another letter from Barbara. Kazir Khan was interviewed on CBS this morning and made a point of thanking reporters for keeping the public informed, despite being criticized and admonished by the current administration. The segment was very emotional and moving. And then the last letter I have to read here is from Carla, who says, Michael, could you please have an in-depth discussion about the Constitutional Convention vote that is approaching? If not today, then any other day before Election Day. Thank you. I have received these letters before. I want you, Michael, to go to WAMC.org and say the Capitol Connection, and you will find at least two or three full programs on the Constitutional Convention, as well as reports from our excellent crack news staff, you know, on the issue. But basically, it comes down to this one sentence. Positive, optimistic versus pessimistic. Optimistic, at least there's a chance they'll do something. Pessimistic, the same old guys who get people elected to the legislature are now going to get people elected to the Constitutional Convention, and it'll be a gigantic waste of money. Go look it up. There's lots of things, including initiative and referendum, that I think would be great if we could have it in New York State. I'm sure that'll happen never. And then put me in the pessimist class. And then term limits, which are wildly popular in New York State. But that won't happen either.
David Soares, where would you come down on this?
I agree. It's never going to happen. So we should probably move on to conversations about Najeer and the Gold Star families who have suffered incredible losses, all of whom I believe have been undermined in the last 10 days.
Teresa.
I really don't have a view on that. I'm not informed enough, but my view is I think we have to focus on the census. If I were to focus on something right now for long-term infrastructure, I would focus, we have a problem, the Trump people are dismantling funding for the census. The census count is key to our state and how we determine districting and so many other things. We need to focus on the census.
You mean like gerrymandering?
Yeah. I also, the letter regarding Khazir Khan's interview at Face the Nation, I highly recommend people listen to that. It was very moving, very powerful.
All right. Let's move on to other topics, if we can. And I agree with David. So let's, which one do you want to go to, David? Do you want to go to the Niger story?
Absolutely. I think there's a...
So we found out there were a lot more troops there than we knew, right? And where are we in that, and what's going on?
And that's one the question. Member of Congress after another is saying, I didn't know.
I didn't know.
I didn't know we had troops there. That's the oversight body of the United States government saying we didn't even know that there were troops there.
Yes. And then there's still the whole, obviously, of what happened, of the death of four soldiers. But yes, many lawmakers are ducking the questions and on the Sunday shows and are forced to address them. And Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the chamber's most hawkish members, told Chuck Todd and Meet the Press that he didn't know until recently that 1,000 troops are stationed there.
I know, David, I'm going to go to you in a moment, but I want you to know Lindsey Graham, who was, of course, best friends with John McCain, stood up for John McCain saying, who was a hawk also, by the way, that they didn't get enough information. They haven't had enough information. McCain was right to say that. David.
It's just, you know, when you consider everything that's happened over the last week, In the families that are grieving today. I mean, there are four communities that are grieving, four families that are grieving, and how do you add insult to injury? You have your leaders who are supposed to be responsible for sending people into conflict, the vast majority of them not knowing, you know, that they were even there. That's adding insult to injury.
Chuck Schumer didn't know either, we found out, during Meet the Press with Chuck Todd, and ultimately agreeing with Senator Rand Paul, who said that we should look at this very carefully. Senator Schumer saying we are in a brave new world. There are no set battle plans.
A brave new world? That's not how I would describe it. So you authorize engagement, you know, in the Bush administration, and that's an open checkbook that you're going to continue to draw from that account anywhere in the world that you want without any kind of consultation with Congress. That's not acceptable.
And remember that John McCain is chairman of the committee. Right. So we're not talking about, you know, a guy who's 10th in line. We're talking about the guy who should have been the first one informed about this.
And think about candidate Trump, who over and over again talked about, you know, too many troops, too many places, taxing our military. We've got to bring him home. and just the opposite. Now we have many more troops in Afghanistan, and the number's increasing. We clearly are active in Niger in a way that even the highest levels of the Congress did not know. We are in Syria more deeply than we have been in a long time, and that is, you know, a mess, would be putting it mildly. It's interesting. I was fascinated. One of the four who was killed, Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Johnson from Ohio, this may mean nothing, but he was a chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear specialist from the Department of Defense. So what was he doing there?
Good question.
Chemical, biological, and nuclear specialist.
There will be a there will be hearings on this October 30th, I believe.
Do you think there'll be anything like Benghazi?
No.
I hope not. I mean, for the sake of the country.
No, in fact, I started to sweat a little bit when I heard them say, you know, is this Trump's Benghazi? And I was like, well, no, but we should have had that in the first place, should we? I don't know. I hope it isn't as divisive as that.
I hope so, too.
We heard from Doreen, who says Carter should listen to his wife. Apparently, I found it interesting that Carter, in the interview, said his wife, Rosalind, disagreed with his take, and there is no evidence that what the Russians did in 2016 election changed enough votes or any votes. So the Carters don't even agree, and that's from Doreen.
Well, there's, look, what I find interesting is that you have the media who will arrive at whatever conclusions depending on the network that you're watching. Then you have the elected officials who continue to pontificate on these issues. There's only one person who is going to be able to deliver information, factual information, obtained through subpoenas, obtained through testimony under oath, and that's Bob Mueller.
Yeah, now Mueller. I think David makes a tremendous point here, because he has played it very close to the vest. And as an investigator, David yourself, I know you know there are times you just don't go public, and you don't allow your staff to go public with whatever you got.
They've been great. I've been watching this investigation, and They're not interviewing people. They're not subpoenaing documents and all of a sudden running to the press and leaking information and causing greater distractions. These folks have been operating methodically. And what can be frustrating sometimes is reading articles, and like I had read over the weekend, about these opinion columns about how quickly, you know, Robert Mueller should move. Well, you know, there should be some conclusion, and it should be done next month. Are you kidding me? Do you have any idea how many documents are being reviewed and how many new leads are being developed every single day, and the amount of manpower that it takes to chase down these leads? And sometimes these leads lead you to nowhere. Yeah. And so this is perhaps one of the greatest investigations that we will ever witness in our lifetime. And this idea that we can cook this thing up and have it done, you know, by the end of session or by some man-made timetable is just absurd.
Let's get to that. We'll pause on that, and then we'll talk more about the investigation in just a moment. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, David Soares, and Teresa Bourgeois make up the panel. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome you. We welcome your letters. Panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. We have been talking about a variety of issues and getting now down to the fact of the Russia investigation, talking about the difference. I believe this is a point you wanted to bring up, Teresa, about the difference between the Mueller investigation and the congressional investigation and why that is important. We are hearing reports that the congressional investigation is stalled, the word, I guess, stalled?
Stalled,
is it? So what stalls it?
Well, there are a couple of things, if I may, Teresa. There are a couple of things going on here. Number one, the chairman of these committees are Republicans. That's the first thing. And they're scared to death because the last thing they want is a primary, you know, in their own districts that will remove them from power. So I think part of that is going, and that is what is going on. I also think it's a political investigation. Teresa, you've said this before. The Congress is looking at the politics of the situation. Mueller is looking at a criminal investigation here. These are very different. And I think in some of these cases, Mueller is indicating to these committee chairmen and others, don't you dare. Subpoena anybody, give them immunity, because those are the people that we're talking to. So you see a series of people who are supposed to come and testify who aren't testifying. And I see Mueller's supremacy in that case. They don't want to be seen as the people who derailed the Mueller investigation.
I just want to read one paragraph, the New York Times article on this that appears in today's issue, which is all three committees looking into Russian interference, one in the House, two in the Senate, have run into problems from insufficient staffing to fights over when the committee should wrap up their investigations. Mm. The Senate Judiciary Committee's inquiry has barely started, delayed in part by negotiations over the scope of the investigation. Leaders of the Senate Intelligence Committee, while maintaining bipartisan comity, have sought to tamp down expectations about what they may find. So everybody was very eager to start. Why aren't they eager to finish?
Well, let's remember, of course, the House investigation, in which one of the great disgraces of all times is they caught that chairman up there,
Nunes. Yes,
up there, you know, basically. Everything I'm thinking of, you can't say on a radio for the president.
There's something else that you should consider here, too, and that is when these collateral investigations are moving in the variety of directions that they're moving in, those people involved have to also be very careful that they don't become part of the criminal investigation. Because there's an argument that could be made that Devin Nunes is part of the criminal investigation.
You bet. And why don't you explain why, David?
Well, his behavior in identifying what was top secret information as a result of the investigation that was being done by his body, running those documents over and sharing that information with the target of those investigations, you know, if I'm Bob Mueller and I'm looking at this, Mr. Nunes is the person that I'm going to want to talk to.
So let's step back for a minute. I totally agree with you. So presumably Mueller's investigation is going apace by all regards. He's highly, highly regarded. So let's set that aside for a minute, but focus on the Congress. One of the things that they're supposed to be looking at, and this is not on the criminal side, but on the policy side, is there is agreement that Russia interfered with our election.
Sure.
We are almost a year out. Just a year out from the next election. They should be focused, if nothing else, on what was the basis of that interference and what can we do to protect ourselves against future interference by Russia or other countries. And the fact that they are not, should not be a partisan issue. And the fact that they are not taking that on in a very aggressive way is so disturbing. I think this issue about Facebook and the Russians purchasing ads on Facebook, and so many, we've known for over a year. It's been more than a year since the intelligence committees signed that joint document, or about a year, talking about Russian interference.
But Teresa, in the beginning, we have, first of all, they're trying to divert attention from this by saying it didn't matter that the Russians were doing this. Didn't matter. Didn't change the elections. Number two, we know that Trump from the very beginning was talking about his very good friend Vladimir Putin. Putin's a good man. Putin's a great guy.
Did you know that the Congress? I'm sorry.
No, please.
The Congress passed.
You're all fisted up.
No, this I learned over the weekend. Congress passed the sanctions against the Russians, and the Trump administration is yet to impose those sanctions.
Teresa, there are several conversations that are going on right here. I think it's unconscionable that in the United States of America in 2017 there isn't a more urgent cry to find out whether some nation involve themselves in our democratic process.
We know that they did.
The fact of the matter is that they did, but there is no sense of urgency in trying to really understand it. I think one of the reasons why is twofold. It's political, right? Because the Republicans have an advantage right now in electoral politics in this country. But secondarily, in order to get at that issue means you have to start talking about regulations over this country's largest industry, and that is tech. That means you have to take on Facebook, you have to take on Google, and you have to take on Apple. And you have to begin talking about regulations. The same standards that are applied to this radio station, to the newspaper down the street, to that television, this is an industry that I think the vast majority of people get their news from. It is unregulated.
You also have to look at voting machines. Did you see that hackathon? They had a hackathon to see if you could hack into the voting machines. And within 5 minutes, they were able to hack in. I agree with you.
The question this that is, the public have to
issues,
ask.
But they, this should be a bipartisan, intensive
exactly.
focus.
The most important question here is, okay, so we know that there was news on Facebook. We know that there was news on Google. We know that every platform had fake news. The question that must be answered is, how did the Russians know where to direct those? What precincts, what districts, how did the Russians know where to direct all that information?
Yes,
towards?
And so the big question and the single thing that I think that has Donald Trump shaking in his boots is a single word, collusion. If collusion can be proved, he's a dead duck. Politically, he's a dead duck. And I think with all the hotel stuff and the kids making deals with the Russians and admitting
and the Mercers,
that they got money.
What's going on with the Mercers and the Cambridge Analytica?
Right. All that stuff, it all has a very putrefying smell to it. And only Donald Trump knows that sooner or later, whether he did anything and they're going to get there or not. And if he did do something, and if all that stuff about the Russians, how he loved them and everything else in the beginning is any sense of it, I think that's what's got him scared to death. And I think the tweets and everything else are meant to sort of cover up the stench.
I think there's another round of NFL tweets this morning, another round of attacking Gold Star families this morning. It's to get us distracted away from something. Is it away from this? Is it so people don't pay attention to the details of the tax plan?
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk more about this. Alan has a fistful of letters. We'll get to those as well. We welcome your letters, panel. God bless you. Are you all right?
Thank you.
God bless you and all you stand for. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, David Soares, and Teresa Bourgeois. Very nice to have you with us. Panel at WAMC.org. And we'll go to the letters now that Alan is pre-reading for your protection.
And for mine, too. Thank you. Dear panel, Congress alone has the power to declare war. They have abdicated it to the executive. It has been this way for over half a century. Perhaps President Trump will be such a weak executive that the legislature will reclaim its constitutional prerogatives, and that's from Greg. Well, maybe anything's possible. Right now, I don't see it. Do you?
I'm troubled by the fact that this guy is the test case.
Richard says,
gotcha.
Richard says, W was told by his intelligence staff that Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear, biological, and poison gas, which he had used against his own populace in the past. W had a stark choice. Believe your intelligence staff, which would necessitate the U.S. invasion of Iraq, or disregard the intelligence chiefs, and hope, in capital letters, hope that they were wrong. Had Bush chosen the latter option and Iraq did, in fact, possess such weapons and subsequently used them against us and our Mideast allies, he would have been hounded down and hung from a tree by an angry American populace. I haven't seen the angry American populace hanging anybody from any trees, have you, including a certain orange-haired person who says a lot of lies?
Well, that's Alan.
Yeah.
It's certainly raising some history. And to me, I mean, look, presidents have to rely on intelligence and they have to rely on information that's being given to them by intelligence. I'm more troubled by the fact that in this current administration, we seem to disregard intelligence. We have a State Department that barely has anyone there keeping the lights on. We have our foreign service workers that have been let go. Russia can dispel, hundreds of our folks that are occupying the embassy, and we don't seem to really care about that.
But help me remember, didn't Dick Cheney, the vice president, go and pressure the intelligence community?
Oh, yes.
To do it his way.
Right? I mean, isn't that part of how we got to those intelligence reports? Mm-hmm. Because Dick Cheney literally went to the CIA and others.
You may
on the Iraqi arms intelligence.
You may remember, guys, that President John F. Kennedy had something called the Bay of Pigs, and you may remember he stood up and he said something, and he meant exactly the opposite, which is I take full responsibility for having done this, and then was heard by some to mutter, and I will never believe another GD general about anything. So,
Dick, the intelligence community, after the fact and during it, there were reports, and more so after the fact, that the vice president pressured particularly the CIA to come up with the information that they wanted to go into war. So, yes, it was an intelligence failure. But it didn't, it was pressured by all reports, pressured by Dick Cheney.
And by the way, we seem to have forgotten how bad that guy was, period.
Yeah.
I think we have to remember that component of it when we analyze the intelligence failure. Well,
the best thing that's ever happened to the Bush administration and Cheney is this new administration.
Yeah, because now all of a sudden they're playing the guys on the white horse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
More letters.
Okay, more. Yes, Joe. Okay. Panel. I don't think President Carter can fix North Korea, but I am pleased he brought attention to the epical greed of the Clintons. Only the roundtable thinks Bill and Hillary's collecting speaking fees of $153 million is a minor political footnote. Wait a second now, Jim. Wait a second now.
Jim's about to get bashed.
I have said this again and again. Now, Teresa and Rosemary have taken a different position, right?
Well, I think there's a little mixing and matching of things there.
Do we have a list of people who have declined $150 million in speaking fees? Because I want to see that list.
Right, right.
Wrongs don't make it right.
If Hillary Clinton can get paid, a lot of money for speeches, why not? Do you condemn men who get paid a lot of money for speeches?
Well, come on now. That's just so.
I'm asking.
No, I'm not going to answer that.
Ask Jim. Does he condemn men who get paid a lot of money for speeches?
I just don't understand.
He says the Clintons. He doesn't say only the female Clintons.
But that's different.
He doesn't say only the female Clinton.
But that's different from the Clinton Global Initiative.
Well, speeches
are separate.
We had progressives criticizing President Obama once he was out of office for accepting, high-figured speeches. And I'm pulling what's left of my hair out of my head, saying if the man can command that kind of money to go and speak, whether it's to Wall Street or anybody else, it's his every right to do that.
I think it's ridiculous that people pay people that much money to go and speak. I think that that's a problem, but they do.
Congress for years has had they've had a rule which says you have to worry about speeches, because what would happen is Congress people would go, and this has been going on at least since the 1960s that I know of, and they go and they say, we want you to give a speech. They come in and pay some congressman $50,000.
But they stopped that, though.
Yes, they did. I just said so. And they would come in and they would say, three guys with cigars in their mouths would be sitting there, and that would be the speech. Tell us something. Because it was outright bribery. It really was. Now, my only problem with the Clintons is not after the fact, as you said, David, but before the fact. You're running for president of the United States, and you don't know enough to stay out of the rain and talk to Goldman Sachs, of all people?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Poor judgment.
Here comes Teresa with out of the West with a Lancet.
Yeah, I'm the one that's sitting closest to her.
Yeah,
I just think that there has been a decades long effort to denigrate the Clinton Global Initiative. And in fact, you know, I'm sure that there are, it's like every other organization, not perfect. But even Charity Navigator, again in the last 2 years, gives it the highest rating. They have done amazing work. Amazing work all around the world. They have organized other people to do amazing work all around the world. And I understand that the Republicans wanted to denigrate them so that they wouldn't be able to, Clintons couldn't use this as an example of their positive contribution to the world. But in fact, it is a positive contribution to the world.
Teresa, I hear you, and I know that you'll do anything to defend the Clintons. However,
not anything.
No, almost
and
everything.
And Hillary Clinton.
I'll accept that. I'll accept that amendment. Almost anything. However, I will say that that there's a big difference between the Clinton Initiative, which I supported on this show not 10 minutes ago, and the idea that you should probably, if you're running for president, shouldn't take a heck of a lot of money from Goldman Sachs.
But
that's
that letter
what I'm
conflated
saying.
The two.
Well, but I'm deconflating it. All right.
It's Jim's fault.
But thank you for writing, Jim.
That's funny. Bob says, did I hear the DA suggest that Nunes might have committed a criminal act? Are we talking obstruction of justice or what? Nunes is certainly a nasty piece of work. But this is the first time I've heard a suggestion of criminality rather than just naked partisanship.
Naked partisanship has a way of bleeding into the criminal world, especially if you're not being guided by counsel. And what I'm saying is that if I'm Bob Mueller, I would certainly want to know what prompted that man's visit to the White House that day.
And Susan,
and if there's nothing wrong with it, then why all the extra? Why go through the great lengths to cover up the fact that that was a visit that was made to the White House in the wee hours of the morning?
Susan says, election. Why don't you talk about our elections being manipulated by states with all kinds of voter ID laws, manipulated machines, etc.? How many elections around the world have been manipulated by the United States? All true, right? All true. We know that some states do their best to make sure that people don't show up.
I think Susan's absolutely right, because I think the day will come when we will reflect on these days and think about gerrymandering and voter suppression. It's an assault on civil rights. I mean, all the progress that's been made in this country, and to have the amount of money that has been spent, dark money that has been spent in suppressing votes, is amazing to me.
And for those who say, you know, we're just a bunch of left-wing liberals, the courts in Texas, in North Carolina, in I believe Iowa, other places, have agreed with this notion that the Republicans aggressively focus on voter suppression. Florida.
And our wonderful Daisy, who writes to us.
Hi, Daisy.
I urge everyone to read Ari Berman's excellent article in Mother Jones about voter statistics and what these state legislators are doing to suppress Democratic votes. In other words, what we just said. Mm-hmm. His look at Wisconsin in the last election is terrifying and depressing. Amazing panel today. Not one, not two, but three exclamation marks.
That's good. We'll take the
and I agree with
the
you
exclamation.
That what happened in Wisconsin, people should pay more attention.
Kathy says, my question continues to be, when the GOP first met with Trump as the presumptive nominee, they agreed to change their position on Ukraine. Why? Why did Priebus, McConnell, Ryan, and the whole cabal agree to a concession for Russia, Putin, before the election? Why, says Catherine.
The only change reportedly made at the Republican convention in their party platform was on Ukraine.
Yeah, good point. So Mitchell says, the list of endless issues that are frightening, but stock market up. So get an economist to explain where all the money has come from in the last 10 months. As long as it rises, so does our own self-interest and survival matter, Trump's campaign strategy, and we are all becoming more Nero than hero. And that is from Mitchell. Well, now that's very interesting, because a lot of people have made the point, right, that there's a difference between the people who have money in the stock market, big money in the stock market, you know, and public policy and rational public policy. Look, greed will out. I think that's what's happening. However, we've been warned by many, many people that the end is near.
What goes up must come down, regardless of who's in charge.
Right,
that's true.
That the market is really overvalued. And every day I want to pick up the phone and call my Tia Kreff guy and say, get me out of here.
There's nothing Twitter can do for what's coming.
What'd you say?
There's nothing Twitter can do for what's coming.
And that's not partisan. That's cyclical, right? I mean, this is, you're not making a partisan comment. This is a cyclical thing that happens with the markets.
No, except that Trump has made a partisan issue out of it. He says, look at what I have done for the stock market as if that's what I have done for the country. Right? He has.
Right. What I worry about is, I mean, some of the I have no idea why the stock market's doing what it's doing, but some say it's because of this, you know, anticipation of the tax package moving through and of all the deregulation. But so much of the tax package that what, just like with healthcare, what they say it's going to do and what the experts say it does are two separate things. I mean, you have Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary, tweeting out the average American family will get a $4,000 raise under president's tax cut plan. So how could any member of Congress be against it? And that was their talking points all over the Sunday shows.
So
but there's no expert analysis, conservative or liberal, that says that that's true. All the analysis says that it goes to the majority of it goes to the top 1%, and the middle class will probably pay more.
Which is why Ryan yesterday said he thought there would be a fourth tax bracket, because they realize they're really that the Democratic talking point on this is going far, and the journalistic talking point, forget about the Democrats, is that the people at the top are going to get a 5% increase in their money. and increase. So they know that they're in danger on that one, and that's why Ryan said it. But it was as if he were hollering into the wind, because I haven't heard it from anybody else.
Yeah. It's the only place that he's still enjoying a honeymoon. I mean, let him enjoy his honeymoon with the stock market, because he's going to have to take credit for its collapse too.
But even you saw it Friday in the press secretary has her daily press briefing, and not a single question. The Senate had just passed their major budget parameters bill. Not a single question on the budget outline or the tax. It was all about NFL football and the Gold Star families.
But this is all
happening without people paying attention to the details of increasing the debt by, what is it, $1.5 trillion?
Yeah.
Cuts in Medicare. Alan, you've talked about this over and over again.
Have.
Cuts in Medicare, cuts in Medicaid, housing cuts, all of these other cuts for a tax package that is skewed to the corporations in the top 1%.
I have a feeling you're going to start hearing that conversation is going to be had, because the debt ceiling conversation is coming.
Well, we're backing up against a bunch of, remember, we're in the 23rd of October, so day 23
right.
of no children's health insurance program. The funding for the community health center is done. The flood insurance program has to be reauthorized. They need to pass these funding for the hurricane relief in Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico, plus the debt ceiling, and then they have to finish a budget, all by December 8th.
Okay. Mitchell says, the list is endless of issues that are frightening, but the stock market is up. Did we read that already?
Yep.
Get an economist? Oh, yeah, we did that. Okay, so sorry. Good morning, panel members.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Joe's happy as can be. He's our David Letterman.
How are you?
He doesn't care. He's our David Letterman.
It's those little bottles of vodka from the flight back from Washington.
Does anyone have any ideas why the major news networks have not questioned the 929 Trump decision to place Chad on the travel ban list, even though the French and the U.S. have military bases in Chad, and they have been our best ally against terrorism in Africa? Rachel Maddow had reported early last week the AP had an article on the 929 Trump travel ban decision and how Chad had immediately removed their troops from Mali and Niger, and that American lives would be in danger. Have a great day, folks. You too, Bill.
Yes, yeah. Some, including Rachel Maddow, have made this connection. I think that's part of the investigation, but did, in fact, they withdraw their troops so that there was less protection for these soldiers.
Okay, and Henry takes your side and wants to back you up, Teresa. Association Health Plans. Teresa is
Way to say what it is.
Teresa is exactly correct on this issue. Kathleen Sebelius, former governor of Kansas, spoke recently about this on a TV news program that was on recently. She said these plans were under-regulated. They failed to set aside sufficient reserves. Okay. And then were bankrupted by incoming claims. Ms. Sebelius said her office had many calls about such plans, which were out of business, leaving their insured without any coverage. She could not help these people. And that's from Henry.
Read Robert Pair's article, New York Times.
What'd you say again?
Read Robert Pair, great healthcare reporter in the New York Times.
P-E-A-R, Pair?
Pair, as in apples and pears, yeah.
We have 30 seconds. You want to get
orange picking time in? Okay. Listen to Jack Beatty on NPR's On Point. He noted that the State Department recently put Chet on the record ban list. And it's too long. I can't read it all.
All right.
And Dwight says, Liberty Medal. Panel, I may have missed any discussion on this topic, but was curious if any of the panel had watched the Liberty Award given to John McCain last night, specifically Mr. McCain's speech in which he slammed the nationalism trend, which is occurring in our government and abdicating our leadership role in international policy. Well, you're exactly right to bring that up, and Dwight, we appreciate it.
All right. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Teresa Bourgeois, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. We will be back with more program after this.